Okay, sorry for the little bit of a late start there, and you have to forgive the PA system. Apparently, it got kind of blown last night, so it might sound a little fuzzy. So, hello, my name is Marie Fisher. I'd like to welcome you to the Women on Wednesday series. Our theme this semester is Making an Impact, Women's Leadership and Community Organizing, which focuses on how women create positive change within their local and global communities. A few housekeeping items before we get started. Please turn off all cell phones and stay in your seats quietly until 12:50 and be respectful of your neighbors. Also, if you could please fill out the evaluation sheet, as we do use this information for future programming. So we also have some upcoming event information on the back table, so be sure to check that out. One of them including an event tonight at 7 p.m. in Ritchie Auditorium. In commemoration of Black History Month and Women's History Month, Angela Davis will be speaking, so be sure to check that out. Our topic today is grassroots organizing for global change. A major challenge to feminists in the current era of globalization is to raise global awareness of women's lives by connecting the local to the global. Transnational feminism works across cultures and unites women's struggles from many parts of the world, and also inspires us to see those connections as a basis for activism and as an essential tool for bringing about social change. With its mission of restoring hope and dignity to women and children in Africa, Ngatha International, a Minnesota nonprofit organization, has mobilized the community to action by organizing fundraising activities for orphans in Kenya affected by HIV/AIDS. This session will reference personal stories and documented footage highlighting the initiatives and projects of Ngatha International in rural Kenya and have connected the local St. Cloud community and the global rural community in Kenya. Dr. Mumbi Mwangi is a professor in the Women's Studies program right here at SCSU. Dr. Mwangi received her bachelor's and master's degree in education from Kenyatta University in Kenya, and later obtained her PhD in education with a minor in women's studies from Iowa State University. Dr. Mwangi is also the president and CEO of Ngatha International, which she founded in 2005. Adrice Brown is a graduate student at SCSU in the Department of Economics, specializing in public and nonprofit institutional management. Brown is also a board member of Ngatha International, in charge of fundraising and marketing initiatives. We are very grateful to have them both with us here today. Please join the Women's Center in welcoming Dr. Mumbi Mwangi and Adrice Brown.
Thank you, Marie, for a wonderful introduction. I just want to mention very briefly that we were expecting two presenters from Kenya, Perpetua Mwangi and Florence Mbugua, but they were not able to come. It's a nightmare to get a visa from American Embassy, so maybe in the future we will have them here. And I wanted them to actually kind of give us the update of what is happening in Kenya, so bear with us. Today I want us briefly to look at my work. So I've kind of changed my presentation slightly because I think I'll focus on what Ngatha International is doing and how I'm using it to connect the local to the global, and especially through my teaching and scholarship. Okay? First and foremost, I think that is part of it. I think you have been introduced. I want to look at how I locate myself as a teacher, and especially as a feminist, and especially when I'm looking at the backdrop of having developed or started this organization, Ngatha International. So I want to let you know that first and foremost, I am a feminist. I'm also a third world feminist. That is somebody coming from the third world. I'm sure we know what third world is. Those are the countries that are developing countries. I'm also look at myself also as a transnational, meaning that my feminism or my passion comes or goes through across cultures, and then of course I also identify myself as a woman of color, which is actually a kind of a title that I adopted when I came to the U.S. I didn't even know that there were people who are called women of color, so I have adopted that as well. I want us to look at, you know, the tenet of feminism, for example. What drives the feminism and probably also feminist agenda, or, you know, what drives the passion, you know, within the feminist framework? And I tend to think about the issues in terms of inequalities and unequal relationships. We know the world is unequal, and those are some of the bases or the tenets on which feminism, whatever kind of feminism we are talking about, is based on. And then we also have to think about the sensitivity to power dynamics. And especially when you think about different kinds of countries, already we know the world is divided in various kinds of zones. We have the northern hemisphere and the southern hemisphere, you know, and what we realize apparently is that most of the countries in the northern hemisphere are developed countries, and those in the southern hemisphere are developing countries. So you already see that the world has unequal relationships. And for you to be able to really see what is happening in the global perspective, you have to be able to look at those kind of inequalities. Then, of course, again, you cannot imagine, you know, life of other women, for example, unless you also take into consideration the actualities of their everyday lives. These are the subjectivities of different women in different parts of the world. And then, of course, feminism also has something to do with the political commitment to personal and social change. We it is not just enough for us to know about the experiences of other women in other parts of the world, or it's not just enough for us to know what is happening in other parts of the world. There has to be a political commitment for us to bring about change. And sometimes when you think about change, you know, we are kind of scared of that word. But I also want you to know that we can actually begin change at personal level. And when we think about change from a personal level, then it becomes much more manageable. Now, why connect the local and the global? You know, again, we have so many things that we can be able to just pinpoint. Now, we need to bring the global home. And I actually draw from one of the feminist ideas of how do we talk about other things that are happening out there. So we have to think about the concept of bringing the global home. And today, for example, during this session, I'm hoping that I'm going to bring the global home here in St. Cloud State University, the global, what is happening out there. We can be able to bring it here so that we can be able to begin to understand what is happening globally. Thinking locally and acting globally, and vice versa. That sometimes we don't have to just think about what we know, but we have to think about how do we actually bring this kind of transaction between, you know, the local and the global. How do we keep that kind of movement, you know, the local to the global to the local. Now, again, connecting the local and the global also brings about the issue of connecting problems to the local problems to the global realities. I'm hoping today that I'll be able to have time and really talk about how, for example, through Ngada International, we are bringing this connection between the local and the global. For example, I'm taking the local as St. Cloud State University or St. Cloud Community. Okay, and the understanding also that any change today must require global consciousness. We cannot be able to isolate ourselves as a community or as Americans. We have to involve, you know, the perceptions and perspectives from other areas. And therefore, any change, you know, must actually involve a global consciousness. And I think understanding other people, other cultures, what is happening out there is important, because we are a global society right now, and what happens here also impacts what is happening in other parts of the world. And of course, you know, the world operates as a global village. And I think we know by now, you know, in terms of what we have already heard about the globalization as a way of bringing the nations of the world together. Now, implications for global interconnectedness and interconnectedness. I think we need to see the world in relational terms. This is important. We need to see the world in relational terms, that we are all connected, that there's something that connects us, right? So we cannot, again, as I said before, we cannot move forward in isolation. The globalization and the concept of global village is really connecting us together. And we have to see the problems of America in terms of how they relate to other countries, or how other countries, for example, relate to us. We talk about, for example, the third world poverty. You know, how does that actually relate to our development here in America? You know, what is that relationship? You know, and do we always see as a kind of an equal relationship, or, you know, sometimes are we ever aware that sometimes we might be the cause of poverty in other parts of the world, even in our own development here? Need for diversity, I think, need for new ways of understanding global issues. We have to change our perspectives. And I think connecting the local to the global is one of the ways I'm kind of thinking of how we can be able to make those understanding of global issues. Okay. Need to make connections that bring global aspects to consciousness. You know, and this, of course, is through, for example, various kinds of programs. And one of the programs, of course, I'm going to talk about is NGATA International. Other things will be educational institutions like St. Cloud State University, or even, you know, our teaching in the classroom, and also in the, you know, so that we can be able to bring this mind to our students and the passion, for example, to make a change. Okay. Now, I have drawn my work and my passion to bring about change from a very, very renowned philosopher one of the renowned philosophers by the name Paulo Freire. And Freire actually is one of the people who brought about the issues of really looking at marginality or consciousness, you know, as a tool for change. And I like this quote. He says, "If the work of education, like any other human understanding, cannot operate other than within the world of human beings, which is a historical, cultural world, the relationships or the relations between human beings and the world must constitute or must be constituted or must be the starting point for the reflections on that understanding." So change or education or our understanding of the world is a human endeavor, is a human undertaking, and we cannot do that unless we actually start from that reflecting on that kind of undertaking. Now, I'm teaching my responsibilities, I think I just skip that a little bit so that I can have to have more time. I think I've talked about that in my own introduction, but, you know, I use my teaching responsibilities as a basis for bringing about this change and connecting the local to the global. So one of the ways I connect, of course, is through SCSU. Mission to provide international experience to students through internationalizing our program. So NGATA International as a project and also as an organization, I've used that to be able to be the basis for connecting or giving students this kind of connection. So NGATA is an international, is a not-for-profit organization, and if you can write that name, I would want you to go back in, you know, when you go back, look us up in our website. You know, we have a wonderful website and you have a lot of information. So please write that down. The mission for NGATA International is restoring hope and dignity to women and children in Africa. And some of the projects that NGATA International has is the orphanage in Kenya, and we also have other initiatives to help women in rural Africa, in rural Kenya for that matter, in terms of water project, microfinancing, and doing something to improve the health for women in rural Kenya. So NGATA has become a vital link between my work with the Women's Studies Program at SCSU and the students and the community. And I've also started looking at the strong lines of connection that have emerged between my teaching and scholarship and research. It's amazing to see how I started this organization just like something that I didn't even think it was important for my teaching, but it's, you know, I've seen it in, you know, kind of evolve to include, you know, getting students to understand the issues and struggles of women in other parts of the world through this organization. It has also provided an avenue for students to translate what they learn into global transnational activism through NGATA project. And I'm going to share maybe a few of those that students have done. Okay, we have also started building shared communities, relationship between departments, and so on and so forth. We have actually seen some of the students actually being involved in service learning and volunteering initiatives. And we have seen students organizing fundraising activities on campus, organizing informational booths, you know, for people to know about the devastation of HIV AIDS in Africa. And some of the students also have traveled to Kenya with me, as volunteers. In fact, there's one of the students who actually got a scholarship with the Human Rights Office in Minneapolis, and she was able to get some money to take her to Kenya for about five weeks. Again, these are some of the avenues of engagement from local to global. You know, we have, focused more on advocate work. We have talked, you know, through the media. We have had, opportunities to speak on the radio and so on and so forth, and also academic conferences. So this is the kind of thing that I feel like maybe full circle, and we talk about maybe discovering uncharted territory. But again, I'm going to kind of go through this a little bit more so that I can focus on the framework for connecting the local and the global. And again, I'm going to go through this very, very quickly because I should be able to finish in the next 10 minutes or so. But this is something I have developed as a framework for understanding the interconnectedness between the local and the global. So if you look at the center there, you have the local, which is the classroom or community or St. Cloud State University. But then you can also include other things, scholarship, for example. And then you can talk about scholarship, okay? And you have activism, right? And then you are talking about teaching. So I want you to see how this kind of creates a beginning for this kind of interconnectedness. And I want you to see this as a framework for connecting that. So that is the local, and you can bring about local connection between teaching, scholarship, and activism. And then research strategies. You can talk about critical thinking by getting your students organized and, seminars and all that. Practical, responsive strategies. Getting students invited, to actually work on some of these projects. Okay, and then we have the third world issues. You can be able to connect the local to see how that impact third world. You can connect the local to see also creative projects, for example. We have term papers. Students get to know what is happening in other parts of the world. I'm hoping I can get to that. Oh, my goodness. I'm not too sure. Okay. Students projects and all that, and let me see, and then we can see the bigger line, the bigger circle. That is when we start looking at the local and see what are some of the things that affect or impact our understanding of the local and connecting it to the global. So you can see the concept of sexism there, racism, okay. Debts, for example, third world. You cannot understand third world women and their struggles unless you understand the concept of debt, the global perspective. Locationality, for example, dependence, poverty, for example, hunger, human rights, globalization. And then I have created that concept of, the arrow showing the local to, from the center to the outside, which is actually kind of showing how the local is connected to the global, which is actually the biggest circle out there. But at the same time, also, when you learn about the global, we can bring it to the local so that you can be able to bring what is happening in the world out there to our local, either in the classroom, in our community, and so on. Okay? We can be able to move to the next one. And then I want to see you, show you the forms of engagement. We can think about our personal, interpersonal level. We can get engaged from the personal level, or we can talk about systemic. Sometimes we think about systems and think and say maybe there's nothing we can do to change the system, but we can actually start from the personal perspective. And then we can see the contextual levels of engagement. We can even involve our own family. So that is the contextual level that I also want you to see. And then the state level, we can make changes. For example, we can call our Congress and say, why is there a lot of violence in Rwanda, for example? What is our our take on that. Why can't the U.S. government intercede or intervene in those kind of situations? And we, that is the time now we bring these issues from the local to the global, but also, you know, involve the state. And then, of course, we have the third level, which is the global economy and so on. Can we say something about the inequalities that are being perpetuated by the global economy, and especially when we are thinking about the global, the poverty out there that we can bring home so that we can be able to understand and make people know what is happening? So I want to kind of see, show you some of the students volunteering abroad, and maybe I'll be very quick now in the next 5 minutes. And this is some of the images of the students and what they are doing when they go abroad. These meetings, you know, other children who are orphans. This is a group of students who also went to a rural environment, and it's so important for you to be able to know what kind of an impact St. Cloud City University can make in a local environment, especially in the rural Africa. These are women. Most of these actually were women who are suffering from HIV/AIDS, and our students were able to talk to them to understand what their experiences are, and especially when they are dealing with HIV/AIDS in a very, very rural, poor community. These are some of the women. These are orphans also in Kenya. These are some of the students that we went with. This is the orphanage in Kenya, and I'm going to ask you to go to the website again. This is one of the students from St. Cloud State University trying to teach children who are orphaned. And we are running, Gather International is running that orphanage. And these are some of the children. If you see, apparently we started at a very, very low level. The students, these are children who have lost their parents. They don't have any parents. We are taking care of them. We are educating them. And you can see, one of the students there with some of the orphans. This is one of the classroom. We are actually just using the little we can. This is the I think it's nursery class. And you can see apparently we have only one desk or something, but still that is not necessarily deterring us from giving them a good education. These are women in the rural area. This is a children again. This is a classroom that you can see we still have very, very modest facilities. If you feel that you can be able to help in one way of get, you know, so that you can give them a better education, that would be fine. And again, that's some of the students as well. And this is the local leaders. I have, you know, to involve the local leaders as well. So we do a lot of consultation with them. And these are the people in the rural area that I'm working with. And this is one of the mothers, the representative of the mothers in the rural. They can't understand why we are going back there to help them. And they are touched by the little that we are doing to help orphans in Kenya. And I think I'm going to stop there, but I just have two quotes here. Any struggle for change must have a global consciousness, since the world operates and controls our lives internationally. And this is the connection really that we need between the local and the global. And then we must base our local and national actions on a world view that incorporates the global context. We cannot ignore the concept of the global and bring it home into the local. Thank you very, very much. And I think I'll just stop there and give Idris some time. And then probably you can have a question and answer session, and we can be able to address some of your questions. Thank you very, very much.
Oh, that's still yours, though. Well, is he doing that? Okay. Well, until he gets it up and running, good afternoon. My name is Idris Brown, and I'm a graduate student here in the Economics Department. And I did a class project for NGATHA International, and what I wanted to do was to try and put together a marketing campaign for NGATHA, because one of the things that I noticed was they didn't have enough resources, awareness, people didn't know about the organization. I see my presentation isn't up yet. Okay. So I wanted to try and get some marketing and awareness campaign going for the organization. And I basically did it as a communication studies project. And right now I'm in the process of trying to get funding to implement it. And hopefully, there we go. So this is basically kind of what I did. Yeah, it's not working. I think. Okay, and basically I started by just telling people what NGATHA was, and I had found out from Mumbi that it actually means virtuous woman in the Kikuyu language, and so I kind of basically went from there. It doesn't work for me. And I found out that the PR problem was the lack of awareness, and so I wanted to get people to know more about the organization. And one of the things that I started doing was sending out surveys across campus to see how many people knew about the organization, whether they'd heard about it or similar organizations that were trying to help people. This thing just doesn't work for me. Huh? Okay. Oh, he's doing it. Okay. So basically, I started by looking at all the different things, what were its strengths, its weaknesses, the opportunities and threats that face the organization. And one of the big things was, of course, the fact that no one, basically knew about it. And so we had the opportunity to present it. During the time when I started doing this, the now president was running, and there was a lot of buzz about Kenya. And so a lot of people were interested in learning about the country. And so it was a great time to tell people about what was happening in this country with the children in particular, the orphans, the people who were affected by HIV and AIDS. And of course, we know our strength is Dr. Mwangi, who started this basically using her salary and funding it using her home in Kenya. And so we had a lot of positive things to tell people about this organization, whereas in all their donations go to the organization directly, helping the children. And the fact, one of the things I found out was that there was certain regulations against Kenya because of some of the fighting that were happening there. And so there were a lot of internal threats and external threats. So a lot of people who just didn't know about the country probably felt that they couldn't donate to that particular organization. And I started by looking at different ways that I could research the different things to look at it. And so one of the things I found out was that students were great mobilizers, and we could start at the grassroots. And this presentation is about grassroots mobilization, and students can do a lot. And so we started by sending out flyers. Students could donate money. They could rally and send out different promotions, doing different types of fundraisers. And so I went through the different classes and found students who would be interested in helping with the different organizations. And these were my two contacts, or three contacts. And Tammy Parsons basically run the financial aspect of it and the sponsorship. A major part of NGATHA's funding is sponsorship. You can basically adopt one of the orphans, and it's $36 a month, which is, when you think about it, one of my big slogans was that $36 a month, that's almost a dollar a day to support and feed and educate a child. I also looked at all the different media reviews that had occurred or that we could tap into. And there are many different ways that we could reach out to people in the community and even students on campus. And so I went through all of those and kind of found what was said and different ways that we could promote the organization more. I did various different compositions of students, looking at the different classes, students who had never heard about it, students who were aware, students who were participants in the organization, and try to get their feedback, what was important to them, why they got involved, why they would get involved, and that type of stuff to formulate my... And you can go through all the groups, because I basically talked about them already. Thank you. And then I looked at different organizations that in the state and nationally that could help the organization, and found, you know, several different organizations and governmental agencies that could help or that have different programs, similar organizations, but to find what was unique about NGATHA. And some of the things that were unique about NGATHA is the fact that you a lot of students here will know or can meet Professor Mwangi and see direct results from their donations and or their participation in the organization. It's a hands-on type stuff. And so we also found that that was a little bit better for them. And different search engines, and can kind of go through that as well. I did surveys to kind of get information, and then I reformulated the problem. Initially, as you probably saw, I initially thought there was only two problems with NGATHA, was a lack of awareness and not being able to retain or get enough donations. But I actually found there were a number of different things that face the organization. All of these, of course, can be solved or become better with your involvement. And so one of the things we're trying to aim for is to get students to become a part of the organization and to be involved in it. And I kind of looked at different goals that I would want us to meet, and there were some that were the awareness goals, and I don't know if you will be able to read some of those, but attitudinal goal and the behavioral goal. My goal would to get people to know more about the organization, to change their perception about what it is, to see what happening in your community also extends to a community far away across another continent, and then to eventually make it a part of your lifestyle, to know that if somebody else suffers, even though you may not see them or know them, that it does affect you, because we are now in a global economy. And so all of this would be to change people's perception and to get them more involved in what was happening. And basically, if we all get, you know, all of you guys involved and more students on campus involved, we would eventually be able to change one child's life, one community life, and eventually the world. And that's the goal of this organization. And that's it. Okay.
Any questions? Oh, no questions. Okay.
It probably was up there and I missed it. When did you begin the organization? And is there a story or two that you can tell? Because many of us connect with the personal connection.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'll briefly just give you a little bit of a background about myself. You know, I was raised and brought up in Kenya. My mother was a single mom and she raised us. And she was struggling to even take us to school. But when I was able to go to school and eventually come to the U.S. and become a professor, I wanted to give back to my country. And I felt that I had that responsibility of wanting to make change or to change lives of children, for example, who did not have parents to push them, as my mother pushed us. And actually, when I came to St. Cloud in 2004, 4, that's the time I said, goodness, I feel like I want to do something. I had no idea what to do. And one day, I could not just hold it anymore. I just drove back to Minneapolis, and I went to the Secretary of State office, and I said, what do you do when you want to start a not-for-profit organization? I had no idea. And somebody gave me a form and said, you know, you didn't even have to come here. It's all in the internet. And I didn't know that. But I filled the form, and they gave me a number to call. And when I called that person and gave them the information, technically Ngatha International was registered. Now, when I was driving back to St. Cloud, I said, goodness, now I have this organization registered. Whom am I going to tell about the story that I have? Who is going to listen to the mission and the vision that I have about, you know, helping women and children in Africa? And it's so amazing because when I was coming back, I just realized I had invited one woman, she was a nurse, to come and speak to my class about women and health. And I called her. Her name is Joy Parker. And I said, Joy, I have just, you know, registered an organization, a not-for-profit organization. Would you mind just coming and let me just tell you the story? You know, so Joy came. We met in Panera Bread division, on Division Street, and Joy brought Temi Parsons that you saw. She brought Temi, and we are three of us. And I told them, this is what I have. I want to do something to help women and children in Kenya. I have registered this organization. I have no idea how to go about this. You know, would you help? And after that meeting, Joy became the secretary. Temi became the treasurer. I became the president. And we formed Ngatha International board members that first time. After that, we were just meeting. We had no idea what to do with. There was articles of incorporation to write. You know, we had to literally apply for the 501c so that you can be able to operate as a not-for-profit. And you know what? We have been operating now for 3 years, and we have all those in place. And then in 2006, briefly, I went to Kenya and I realized apparently that there are so many people I knew that I wasn't seeing them anymore. And I would ask people, where is so-and-so? They would say, my goodness, that one died long time ago. And I asked several people, I said, goodness, if all these people I knew before I came to the U.S. are all gone, what is happening to their children? And I talked to one of the chief. I'm sure you saw one of the people I was telling you, the community leaders. The chief is the government representative in the village, in the rural village. And he told me, you know, I told him, I want to go to some of these homes and just see for myself. And he organized, was very, very happy to do that. He organized for my travel, and he took me to several homes. But one home changed my mind completely. I went to this home. There was a grandmother who was very old. She had almost nothing in that environment, that homestead. And when I entered into the homestead, and when I'm talking about homestead, I'm talking about a homestead. There is almost nothing there. But she showed me three freshly dug graves. And she told me, this is my first daughter. These are her three children. This is my second daughter, her three children. And the third daughter, and she had also three children. So this grandmother, who had almost nothing, was raising nine grandchildren. She had lost three of her daughters within a period of 2 months. So she was taking care of those, and she had nothing. I wondered what they were eating or what they were doing and so on. So immediately I decided there and then that I was going to convert my home that is not very, very far from there. I converted my home into an orphanage. And before I flew back to the U.S. in fall of 2006, I left people organizing, reorganizing my home to be able to convert it into an orphanage. When I came back in the fall of 2006, I had no money. Ghana International had not done any fundraiser or anything else. The first people I talked about what I did were my students, the 201 Women Introduction to Women's Studies. I told them, I want you to give me a proposal of something that you are going to do to raise money to fund the orphanage that I have just started in Kenya, and we have no money. The students at that time did some project. They said some fundraising, $400 at the end of the semester. OPA, Organization for Prevention of HIV/AIDS in Africa, gave us $1,000. That is the money we sent in January 2007 to start that orphanage. Today we have 60 children who are being taken care of. We have employed 8 teachers, qualified teachers. They did a search for teachers all over Kenya to actually be able to be employed by Ngatha International. We have 8 teachers who are teaching these children, and we have now a school running. We have 6 workers who are taking care of these children. And you know what? We had no money. And we actually have not had any money. We are just, you know, waiting for donations from people. But it's amazing. I'm so amazed that we are still running 3 years after that. When I came back to the U.S. and I told Temi and Joy what I had done, I said, we have started an orphanage. She said, what? And they were telling me, Mombi, you know, here in America, when we have a project, we sit down, we plan, we organize, we fundraise, we whatever. We don't just do anything just like that. I said, I'm sorry, but that is actually how I felt. So I told Joy and Temi, you have to help me fundraise. We have an orphanage going already, you know. And they told me, you know, this is not how we do it here in America. But you know what? When you have a real problem, and you see real people, you cannot just begin to say we have to plan. You respond immediately. So, Jane, that's how I started Ngatha International. And I am so grateful that we are still running. We still have a lot of challenges in terms of finances. But I am also hoping that we are, through this kind of forum and any other forums that we have, we will be able to get people to know what we are doing so that they can be able to support us.
Does that mean I asked?
Okay. Any other question? Yeah. Yes.
I have a general question. I've been to a lot of presentations and they talk about grassroots movements and sort of help women in developing countries and that sort of thing. But my question is, is that more effective, or is it also effective to sort of push for structural changes that promote education and employment for women and children?
Yeah.
Is this what's working right now, grassroots?
I think that's a very, very good question. And sometimes we focus on grassroots organizing, you know, so that we can be able to get these women or the marginalized groups to be able to, first of all, become aware of their situation. You cannot change people's lives unless they also first and foremost know that they are in a problem or they have a situation. You'll be surprised, apparently, that many people do not have that self-consciousness about their status. And then after that, then you can be able to mobilize and get the people who, you know, who are involved with the structure, you know, that this the structure that is political structures, economic structures. But you have to have these people already prepared, right, so that they can be able to push their agenda across. So yeah, it's very true. I think we still need grassroots organizing, so especially for civic education and social and self-consciousness, so that they can be able to become a force, that they can be able now to push their agenda into the structural setup, and either in terms of constituency, in terms of parliament, for example, or political structures or economic structures. Now, what has happened in the past is that women have been organized around the grassroots, but that was the end. What happens? Women just know that they have a problem, but nobody else ever helps them, and they are not able to push forward. But I think we have to go to that next step of saying, okay, fine, women have organized. How many people know about Wangari Maathai, her work in Kenya? Professor Wangari, she's a Nobel Prize winner. She organized women in the rural Kenya and told them, you know what, we can change the environment by planting trees. And, you know, she was saying, you know, before people had gone with all the ideas of, oh my goodness, you have to plant this kind of tree, you have to dig big holes and everything. And that was very technical. And she told them, you know what, forget about that. Do you plant tree, you know, food, you know, every day? And the women are the people who do the agricultural work. She said, just how you plant, the seed of your corn or beans, put a tree. It will grow. And that revolutionized people's lives, women's lives, and they have actually saved and preserved the environment. It's the same kind of thing. She organized the women, but she also gave them an avenue for them to be able to know what it means for them to change the environment. So I think that is actually how we can be able to connect the grassroots organizing with the structural setup, either in terms of politics, environment, and all that. Did I answer your question? Okay, wonderful. Any other questions? One more question? Okay.
If anyone has additional questions, please feel free to come down and ask. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us. Thank you very much.